The playoffs are near, and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves the
puck. To the line, Hughes, Jurs!
Yes, existence. Take you to listen.
First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes makes it 1-0.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes beat reporter here. Like, I won't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our heart.
Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. You can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word, hockey season. That will get you $5 off your order at ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic, on all platforms. Go check them out. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, got a lot of fun giveaways and stuff. Get your hands on some trading cards. Regardless of what you trade, whether it be the Pokemans, the hockey cards, the basketball cards, the football cards, whatever it is, Zephyr Epic has got you covered. The best part about Zephyr Epic, in our humble opinion, is that they ship free anywhere in Canada on any order over $50 from
Dawson Creek to Dawson's Cove. Shout out to listener of the show, Eric. He wanted Dawson Creek thrown in there. And he gave me Dawson's Cove, which I did a little bit of research into. You know, I like to research my Newfoundland towns. So the population in Dawson's Cove, 60 people. It's on the south shore of Newfoundland, also known as Sandyville. And the little bay in there called Fortune Bay. This is the bay that goes into Dawson's Cove. It basically looks exactly like an arm pointing a finger. If you look at it from like up in whatever Google Space or something, I don't know whether you look at Google Maps, whatever, looks like an arm pointing into the Newfoundland there on the south shore. So there you go, Dawson Creek to Dawson's Cove.
I could have guessed that Dawson's Cove was in Newfoundland.
Oh, for sure.
Also, Newfoundland's kind of small. How does it have all these cities?
Because, like I said, there's 60 people in this one, I didn't hear anything about private dwelling this time, so I don't know who's in a cave, who's not in a cave
it's
in this
more
one.
Of a town.
Yeah. I didn't say it was a city.
Well hold on a second here, because we can't have false advertising. Are we sure that Zephyr Epic can actually ship to these guys, or would they have to go to a PO box? Would they have to go to the Canada Post?
I saw that they used to have a post office in Dawson's Cove. It stopped in 1966. So it's been a hot minute since mail has actually been sent to Dawson's Cove. So yeah, Zephyr Epic, they'll get it in the area. You just got to go drive and pick it up somewhere, I guess. Or
that's good enough. We'll get it close by. You go pick it up.
Yeah, the whole Zephyr Epic delivers all of Canada thing. It is starting to become some shoddy reporting by me for some of these Newfoundlands. But it's 2022. I'm sure they'd figure out a way to get it there. To get you your Pokemon cards, as you called them.
Yes, the Pokemans.
Which, by the way, I found an old binder of Pokemon cards while I was over on Vancouver Island. And not the hits I was looking for. Got a really good collection in there of like a good set for like the base cards, the first one that came out in whatever 1999 or whatever it was, but not a lot of shinies. Only ended up finding like five shinies in there, but I was still happy with it. Brought back some nostalgia for sure.
Anything worth anything?
There was like a shiny Gyarados in there. There was a shiny Scyther, Wigglytuff. So like pretty basic shiny cards, but there was a handful of shinies.
I'll tell you what, man. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but the city of Port Moody and Port Coquitlam, they do a big, for Earth Day, they do a citywide garage sale. I don't know if you guys have seen this. There's over like 70 garage sales happening, I believe, on Saturday. Like 70 garage sales. And I loved garage sales as a kid, so I'm going to be hitting those on Saturday morning. Maybe look for some shiny Pokemons.
I like garage sales as well. Even just going to the thrift store. I remember the first time, one of the first things I did a lot of when I moved over here from Nanaimo was like hitting up like the big value villages, because you guys have so much different stuff. When I was in Grand Prairie, the Grand Prairie value village were insane. It was crazy, like the stuff that you would find at the Grand Prairie value village. There would be like a full row of just Ed Hardy shirts and like the most ridiculous things you could find in Grand Prairie, because there was a lot of people making a ton of money working the rigs, just like giving away really nice stuff back to value village to donate. And yeah, it was a gold mine at the value village in Grand Prairie.
Wow. Okay, we're also delivered by the great folks at DoorDash.
Ding dong.
Use promo code CONVODD, capital C, capital D's, all one word. That will get you 25% off and free delivery on your first order with the DoorDash app. Does not get much better than that, folks. My name is David Quadrelli. We've already kind of talked a little bit, and we got that DoorDash read a little bit late, but my name is David Quadrelli. I'm joined, as always, by the man who built the place, Chris Faber, and Harmon Dial, who hasn't said a word yet.
Well, Harm, what's the...
Where's my intro?
What's your... Oh, yeah.
Oh, where yeah, is I gotta hit it. Here? You're right. My mistake.
Harmon Dial.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Harmon Dial joining us.
You know what's great? Where's my intro? As he comes in, that's the first thing he says on the episode. Harm, speaking of DoorDash, what's your go-to on DoorDash? What's your... Are you like? Do you ever order food?
I do it a lot on the road. I don't usually do it when I'm at home. My go-to is usually Chipotle. I'm a huge Chipotle guy, especially on the road, because I can't eat... Like if I go and eat burgers and fries every time I'm out on the road, I'm going to end up feeling like crap. So Chipotle's, I would say I'm one of their biggest Canadian supporters, probably.
Wow.
With the amount of times, like I legitimately, and for me, I can eat the same thing over and over again. So God, I've had so much this year. It's actually nuts.
What's your go-to order at Chipotle?
Chicken and rice bowl, black beans. Sometimes I'll mix it up with pinto beans. Sometimes guac too.
I don't think I've ever had Chipotle, to be honest.
What?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it.
They may not have one in Nanaimo, right?
No, they don't. But something about like making a burrito or like tacos, like you can make really good burritos and tacos at home.
Don't even.
Yeah, you can.
No,
you 100% can.
Sure, you can, but. You know,
like, listen.
And I'm not arguing on behalf of Chipotle here. I'm saying a place like Sunny Chibas up in Squamish, you can't make that at home.
No, I can't make that. But
okay, that's what I mean.
That's like, not get, what I don't know. Good what Chipotle Mexican is. Food,
like, it's a convenience.
You can make pasta at home. You can make good pasta at home.
I hate when people buy fettuccine Alfredo at like. But this was like, if you go to like Boston Pizza, I think I've said this before in the pod. I know I have. If you go to Boston Pizza and you order like fettuccine Alfredo, like you're literally throwing money down the drain.
Yeah.
Like, but if you go to maybe, you know, what's Pastor Mori going to be called?
Claudio's.
Here? Claudio's. That's probably a
deal. Hey, no free ads. We want a sponsorship for them. We should be talking about them if we're not going to.
But we could say nice things about them before.
Yeah, we always do. But it'd be cool if the sponsorship was just like, yeah, you guys can eat here for free whenever you want.
Yeah, it used to be the office before when we were recording back at BCIT. You and I, we would go to Pasto Mori every time.
I've told this story so many times on the podcast, and so have you. But when you moved out here, and like we had only met in person like twice when we decided we were going to work together and partner, I was like, yo, meet me at Pasto Mori. That's where we do business. And we did. And it was great.
That is where the business went down. We went there. Yeah, we'd always show up with the same thing, penne toto, for a while before I started mixing it up a little bit. Yeah,
focaccia every time.
Excited for the new place to open. Excited for them to be maybe part of the pod here in the summer as well.
The last time you walked out of that place, you said you were feeling Italian.
I was walking with a limp. I literally
strutting your steps.
We finished our lunch and there was a ring on my finger at one point, a gold ring on my pinky. I don't know how it got there, but I felt real Italian coming out of there at the end.
Luca Brasi leaving Pasto Mori for the last time. Okay, Harman, not to exclude you from the Pasto Mori talk. I know you've been there too, but we're approaching the 10-minute mark, which means it's time for us to kick up the hockey talk.
Otherwise, Justin, he's going to be pissed in the reviews there.
Exactly. So the Vancouver Canucks lose, obviously, last night. Minnesota Wild, it's a good game, all in all. I think we can all agree that that was a pretty good performance from the Vancouver Canucks. They put forth a good effort, just came up a little bit short. You know, they're a tired team, right? And, you know, Bruce Boudreaux spoke post-game, said that it's no excuse because everybody's tired right now. And he has a great point, but, you know, they are a fatigued team, and it was evident in their play against Minnesota last night, especially toward the end, not being able to close out a game. You can't really fault the players for that one, in my opinion. When I watched that game, I saw a team that had just given everything that they have this season.
Yeah, it was a really strong fight. I think after the first 5 to 7 minutes in the first period, the Canucks really came on, found their skating legs, were disruptive on the forecheck, spent a ton of time in the offensive zone. And even when Minnesota would have their time in Vancouver's end, the Canucks seemed to do a decent job of keeping them to the outside. Now, in the second period, I think that was pretty high event for both teams, but right there, the Canucks, I think, were going pound for pound with the Wild. It was just the third period where I think the Canucks started to run out of gas. And when you talk about fatigue, I think one of the underrated factors of last night's game, and I'm not trying to blame him at all, was I think Thatcher Demko just looked fatigued. And I think in the second period there, he probably let a goal or two in there that he probably would have wanted back, especially given how well he's played this season. And when you look at the Minnesota Wild, for me on paper, I think they're a dark horse contender. I think they're a legit, can win the Stanley Cup team. So on paper, it's already a significant disadvantage for the Canucks, and Demko had to kind of be the sort of neutralizing force to kind of mitigate the difference in team quality. And that's what he's been able to do all year. But I think that's where you look at him having to play the last two periods against Ottawa, right? That was supposed to be a night where he had off. And we've also seen, or at least I saw a couple clips from social media circulating with, I think it was the Dallas game. I don't know if you guys saw it, where he was puking apparently during some of the TV timeouts, even though Boudreaux has been insisting that Demko's not ill. But regardless, Demko had to play the two periods there in Ottawa, plus OT, plus shootout, when he wasn't supposed to because of Halak's injury. And I think you could tell he wasn't quite as sharp as he usually is. But the team's overall effort was, you honestly could not have asked for a better road performance. Yeah, there were mistakes. It wasn't an artful performance, but overall, I think they gave it their best shot, and just the mountain was just too steep to climb here.
Yeah, and you saw some players that kind of take over that game at points throughout. I mean, Elias Pettersson doing all the right things, going hard to the net, being rewarded for it. You saw Kevin Fiala kind of take over late in that third period, and that whole line of him and Kaprizov, like watching them take it to another gear, that it just felt like the Canucks, though they were running really hot for a long time, specifically the second period. I mean, the second period was back and forth action. That was a lot of fun, and the Canucks came out of that second period looking like the better team. But the third period, it just felt like there was another gear that some of those top end players got to for the Minnesota Wild that the Canucks just weren't able to get up there. And I think like, I think about this with Kevin Fiala and the goal that Fiala scores to give them the lead, where he just basically has the puck on a string, skates around the whole offensive zone, beats the defender Brad Hunt as he's trying to follow him. No Canuck really was there to kind of give help on Fiala. And something just like clicked in my brain where it's like, I thought about the two Pettersson goals, and like Pettersson worked really hard to get those two goals. He found himself in a really good spot when he received the Garland pass. Then he worked really hard to go to the net and score his second goal of the game. But it feels like it's been a while since we've seen a Canuck player have the type of confidence that like Kevin Fiala had yesterday. Like after him getting a few shots on net, it looked like we saw that maybe at times with JT Miller in the middle of the season, a little bit with Pettersson. But like no player on the Canucks to me has the confidence still to be able to like carry the puck all the way around the zone and then score a goal. Like you see it a lot where they can carry the puck and it looks great, good cycle. But to me, it was like a single player. Kaprizov did it a few times himself as well. Didn't score like Fiala did on that one, but Fiala was able to just like single-handedly be the one out of 10 players on the ice that was just controlling the pace of play for a while. And he did it multiple times. Like I know that there's potential for players like Elias Pettersson, even Brock Besser at times, and definitely JT Miller to be able to do that. But you just didn't see that gear get hit by the Vancouver Canucks when the Minnesota Wild had multiple players doing that in the third period.
Yeah, I think Fiala is the sort of player stylistically where the Canucks just don't have that, right? Yeah. And with a player like Pettersson, he obviously attacks in a much different way, right? His distinguishing quality is his hockey IQ and how he can see the next play. And so he has never been a physically dominant player or someone who is extremely fast or kind of has those end-to-end rushes or that sort of thing. It's always kind of his vision and his shot that allow him to produce at a high end level. And I think with Miller, he's a little bit more reliant on his physical tools, but even then he's more of a bigger body and attacks in a different way. Whereas Fiala has always been, he's just kind of a Red Bull with his offense.
Yeah.
He's instant. He's just electric is the best way to describe it. One of the most dynamic players in the league. And for years, he's been one of those players who consistently stands out in terms of being one of the NHL's elite forwards at zone exits and zone entries, kind of being in the same tier as the likes of MacKinnon and McDavid and Barzal in terms of how they drive transition offense and their skating ability and how they can keep the puck on a string and single-handedly create offense. And now,
you know what, can I just jump in? When you say single-handedly create offense, it's in a situation where he gets the matchup on Brad Hunt, and he knows that he's such a better, more skilled player offensively than Brad Hunt is defensively.
He's a one-on-one killer.
And he's able to find those one-on-ones that work. To me, that was what I didn't see in the third period for the Canucks. They weren't able to find Pettersson against, you know, whatever third-line defenseman that's on the ice and get a one-on-one like that. Players like Fiala, they create those opportunities, and his line mates have to be on board with that as well. Like you bring it up with Fiala, him being that type of player. Like Pettersson can do those type of things. I think that's the interesting thing, but you bring it up, like his IQ and his shot and his willingness to work and like get to the dirty areas. That's how he got those goals yesterday.
Yeah. And it's, again, when we talk about Fiala having these qualities, it's not that he's a better player than some of the Canucks top, and guys, it's just, he attacks in a different way. And because he has that explosiveness in his skating, he has a top level gear when he's on that very few Canucks can ever get to. And so that's where with him and with Kaprizov, they were able to kind of hit that new level that the Canucks, honestly, in the third period just didn't, I think, even have the energy for. And so, I mean, we kind of saw it. I think the closest example of that in last night's game was Connor Garland at points. I thought a lot of the focus was on Pettersson and the two goals that he had. But Garland, if you look at both of those goals, was really instrumental, and I thought he was really dynamic making plays at the neutral zone. But again, he's no Kevin Fiala. So, and I know Canucks fans hate Fiala. He also, I think he's just a Canuck killer, to be totally honest with you.
He is a lot, yeah.
He plays his best hockey whenever the Canucks are on the schedule. So, and I know fans were kind of pissed off at some of the Slufits on, say, like Tyler Myers. So, I don't know how much listeners will like us sort of heaping all this praise on Fiala, but kind of is what it is.
Don't forget in the bubble when he like cross-checked Markstrom and then got jumped by Troy Stetcher and Brandon Sutter. That's all I want to
talk about that.
I think Well, you bring up Connor Garland. I wouldn't mind spending a little bit of time on him because I tweeted out the stat yesterday. 26th in the NHL for primary assists at 5-on-5. There's obviously a lot of talk if Garland fits with this team, if he fits with what management wants to do, if he fits with the coach. Obviously, he doesn't get a lot of power play time, but he still continues to produce at 5-on-5. And when he's playing with a guy like Pettersson, he has the vision and the playmaking ability that's kind of like no one else on this Canucks team to me at 5-on-5. Like, to see what he does at 5-on-5, he can create offense in such a high level way that, you know, when Nils Höglander comes back eventually, or whether it be, it sounds like it'll be next year, obviously, but when he comes back, he's the type of guy who creates a lot of 5-on-5 offense. Do the Canucks like need to think more about Connor Garland staying around, or is he going to be valuable enough to be a player that they have to move on from? Like, because I think we've kind of talked about this quite a bit with like JT Miller. Likely to us, I think, is if you can get a massive haul back from Miller, you have to look that way because another contract for him is going to be huge. But is Garland in the same books of like, what is Garland's return really? Because he does a lot at 5-on-5. And you don't want to see this Canucks team fall apart and not be able to score goals at 5-on-5 in the future here. But you have a guy like Nils Höglander who also is able to create a lot of offense at 5-on-5 too in a different way. Like, Garland's a better player right now. Nils Höglander's still very young. But those are your two to me that like drive offense at 5-on-5 so well from their effort and playmaking ability. So is there enough value in a Garland trade where they should move on from him?
I got to say, like, we talk about Brock Besser, JT Miller, and Connor Garland as being the three guys that one of, at least, the Canucks are going to move this offseason. I got to say, especially down this stretch run, like, I know fatigue is a factor, but Miller's back check in the neutral zone on the first goal last night was just dreadful. And it was just, I was watching it and I was saying to myself, like, all right, I know I've been, you know, I've said, like, okay, maybe if you can get him at this number or this number, but, man, like, to say that this is the guy that we want to give $9 million to for like 5 or 6 years, I don't know if I necessarily see it with Miller. Like, I get the point producing thing, but it's just, you know, even if his offense isn't there, he can't really rely on his defense. Like, his defensive play isn't there. I know he kills penalties and there's, you know, there's the perception out there that he's like, he's good on the PK, but, you know, he hasn't been good defensively. And I think, you know, if he were to take a step back offensively, which is obviously the big thing that people are worried about when you talk about this contract, like, he can't do what Tanner Pearson does and just fall back on his defensive play. Like, he can't do that. So are you then worried that you're going to be getting what you saw in the 2021 season for Miller, where it was just constant F-bombs and nothing was going right for him? And I know nothing was going right for the team at that point, but Are you worried about that? Because to me, I watched that game last night and I see what Elias Pettersson's doing. And then I see what JT Miller's doing defensively. And I just say, I don't know if this is the guy you want to put that much salary toward.
Well, two things. I think number one, at the number it would take to keep Miller, likely, right? We obviously don't know the exact number, but let's say around 8.5, something similar to what Sam Mika Zibanejad got. You're sort of expecting him to kind of be this 90-point first-line center. That's the expectation. Now, for starters, I think because of his defensive flaws, I think he's, I've talked about this before, I think he's a much better all-around player in terms of his two-way value on the wing than he is at center, because at center, he doesn't have to manage the puck as much. And we've seen a lot of, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but recently, he turns the puck over, and I'm not blaming him because he's just a better winger than he is a center. But so I think that for starters is an important thing to keep in mind, but you're essentially paying him to be your first line sort of center that can put up 90 points that you can win a Stanley Cup with. And obviously the Canucks have Elias Pettersson, who is much better suited to being that player, but paying him, like, that's a price. You expect that once you're paying a guy like Miller $8.5 million to be that Zibanejad type player. And now you think ahead and think about the term it would take, you know, six years easily, maybe seven. And you think about, okay, what does a 33-34-year-old JT Miller look like? Is he still going to be putting up 90 points? What if he's down to, he could still be one heck of a player in years 4 or 5, maybe in 6 in his contract. Maybe he puts up 50, 60 points a season and he's still a good top 6 forward. But if you're paying him $8.5 million, you need him to be a lot more than just a good top six forward. You're expecting him to be an elite first line producer. And so, yeah, I know the topic started with Garland, but we're kind of going on this Miller tangent, but, yeah, I think that's where, when you look at a Garland, it's just, and we've had this conversation so many times before, so I'm not going to go too deep into it now, but his cap hit, how he's, you know, locked up, and sort of the fact that he hasn't had the power play opportunity, and the fact that his point totals don't jump off the page. Like, I think there's more upside there. I just think that his trade value wouldn't be there either. So I think we're all kind of agree that independent, like, let's forget about Miller. That's a different topic. At least as it pertains to Garland, we kind of want to see him either rebuild his value, even if you do want to move him, but there's also a ton of value in his game and just keeping him, to be totally honest.
Just don't move him yet is, I think, the sentiment.
Yeah, I think looking at contracts, like, it makes way more sense for it to be a Besser or a Miller. And to me, it still is Miller. Like, I get it. He's a lot of Canucks fans' favorite player, of course. Like, look at what he does when he's on. I love watching JT Miller when he's creating offensively, what he's able to do on the power play, you know, the highlight reel plays that he does. Being a top 10 scorer in the NHL is massive. But a team also looking like they're going to be, I think of teams that are going to be in like the final eight of the NHL playoffs this year. And they're thinking, man, we're so close. We're on the up. Adding this guy for $5 million on our cap next year, who even knows if we're going to re-sign him. But I think there's enough value still in having JT Miller for one whole season that teams are going to still give up a haul. And I think, I thought there would be a really good market for him on the trade deadline. I guess I was kind of wrong there, thinking that some team was going to make a big investment in him for 2 years. Now it's going to be about getting him for the one season and potentially re-signing him. Like, I still think there's a massive play for him there. And somebody, some team that like finishes in the top eight and maybe had a better season than they thought, but has been working towards being a playoff team consistently, they are going to give up a haul for JT Miller. I think it's going to be one of these teams that gets eliminated, like I said, in the final eight of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's going to be the team that goes for JT Miller.
Or even a team like Philadelphia. Philadelphia's in the same position as, I don't know how close you guys have followed the Flyers situation, but they're an absolute tire fire right now. And they're trying to do the whole...
worse than Arizona since January, I think.
And they're trying to do the whole retool aggressively, and they've lost Claude Giroux, and they've said that they want to make the playoffs next year. They're a dumb organization, to be totally honest with you. Like, I'm sorry if that comes off too harsh, whether it's ownership or management's decision.
I've heard the idea of like wild card organization, or like wild thoughts organization, but dumb does fit it as well for some of the moves that they've made over the past little bit.
I mean, they're just a tire fire. I should have said tire fire instead. They're a tire fire of an organization rather than dumb. I think that was too mean. I apologize.
Well, the rest of the line thing was pretty dumb. So,
God, I still can't believe they did that. But anyway, the Flyers, so they've lost Claude Giroux. They want to get back into the playoffs, and obviously they're going to, I think, get like Ellis and Kucherov healthy, but they need top-end talent. They are so desperate for superstar talent, and so even in Philly, they've been talking about, oh, like, do they take a run at Johnny Gaudreau or something, right? What if they take a run at a JT Miller?
Mm-hmm. No, it is another team to bring up for sure. I still look at, like, I think if the LA Kings win their first playoff series, like first round of the playoffs, right? Because they're going to match up against Edmonton, right? Pretty doable for them to win. They win that and then they lose. That's kind of the team that I'm mentioning that's like gets to the final eight, probably better than they expected, has some cap space. That's another option, but you're right.
Like, my point was just the pool for teams that are interested in Miller is going to be wider than just contenders.
Right.
Yeah, New York, Colorado, even if those teams get bumped in like the first round, I'd say the Leafs. Leafs, you saw what they did against Tampa Bay last night, getting bounced in the first round. That's what they're going to play in the first round.
To the next point of this, because we're going to have a lot of off-season conversation about this, of course, but the Brock Besser situation, to me, the best thing is to sign Brock Besser.
Like, undervalue,
I don't think you're getting that much back for a player like, where maybe if you sign him to even like another bridge deal, maybe there's value in year one or two there, or two or three, to trade him then. Because I don't think you're getting, there's just too much of a complicated situation with him as an RFA in a year that's been so up and down. And that's kind of been Brock Besser's whole career, right? Like, it's been really high ups, but some pretty low downs as well. And he hasn't really been able to find that consistency throughout his young NHL career that I think just signing him and seeing what happens, like, you're not going to be paying him more than 7.5 on even like a bridge deal. If you sign him 8 years, maybe, but like, then I just don't think that that's going to happen. I think an idea might be looking at 3 years kind of with Brock Besser, maybe like 4, depending how you want to go and what the money kind of looks like for him. I just think that he's not someone that I want to trade. And we kind of covered the Garland thing where I think he's too valuable in your lineup compared to what you get back in return for a trade that you can't move on from him.
Yeah. I've talked about this in a past podcast, brought it up in a past mailbag, but the Canucks don't have to sign that qualifying offer. They've got to do the reverse arbitration thing. The team elected arbitration. Obviously, the Canucks did it with Mason Raymond back in, I believe, 2010 or 2011. And then I believe the last player to have it happen to them was Vladimir Sobotka. That was the last time that we've seen it in the NHL. So it's not super common. It's pretty rare, but now would be a good time for the Canucks to be using it, even if they don't actually do it, just to use it as a bargaining tactic, like to say, hey, sign with us long term, or sign a deal here for 3 years, whatever it is. You have to sign this deal or we're going to take you to arbitration, and we're 100% going to win that based on your production. Because again, like, Brock Besser's numbers don't jump off the page this season. So if they did take him to arbitration, Besser's camp knows that that number would be lower than what they would like, the 7.5 qualifying offers. So,
but they could just accept a QO then.
Not if the QO is not extended to them.
But how can you go into reverse arbitration without
QOing? Yeah, you don't have, so you don't actually have to give the player, you don't have to extend a QO. It doesn't make them become a UFA. You can do this in lieu of a qualifying offer, reverse arbitration or team elected arbitration. You can do it instead of offering a qualifying offer. You keep the rights to that player when you do that. Okay, we'll cut to break. On the other side, we've got a few things to talk about here. We got the playoff odds. Come on, guys. Playoffs, they're still happening. Bruce Boudreau, likely to return as head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And we've also got our poll question. So keep it locked, keep it loaded on Canucks Conversation.
And before we go any further into the episode, want to give a shout out to Parallel 49 Brewing. You guys can find Parallel 49 beer all across BC and Alberta. And right now we want to give a quick shout out to the Unparalleled Pack featuring 4 of the P49 favorites, the Trash Panda, the Filthy Dirty, the Jerkface 9000, and the Hillbilly Ninja. My favorite of the 4 there, the Jerkface 9000, the pink can. Something good about those cans there at Parallel 49. So go out and try them. You can find them in most liquor stores across BC and Alberta.
All right. And a massive thank you to Parallel 49 Brewing Company.
Tell you what, but Parallel, the patio. Patio now, yes. It's summertime, right?
Patio. It's nice out.
It is nice out.
I suggest we golf today.
It's time for the patio pretty soon here. And I know what I was thinking too, because I went to the Seas game, I don't know, a few days ago, last week, can't remember, Tuesday. So yeah, very recently. Thinking they're pretty damn close too. You hit the patio before, then you move your way up to the Vancouver Canadiens, and you know what they got at the Seas game? Space Kitty, bunch of different Parallel 49 beers, all that good stuff. So Parallel's got their beers out there too. You don't have to stop drinking the Parallels after you leave the patio. You go up to the Seas game, bada bing, bada boom, keep it going.
Canadiens have a doubleheader today because they had to rain out their game yesterday. Man, I'd love to be at the Nat. I got to get out there soon.
There's going
to
be a lot of rained out games with this extended season now for the Seas. There's going to be a lot of rained out games.
They didn't usually start till like pretty well into the summer, usually.
It'll be fun this year. The good game I went to was all right, but I tell you, I had the worst seats in the whole place. I'm not sitting there again. Next time, I'm just like getting back. I was front row, and the coaches were all in front of me. It was brutal. I couldn't see half the game, so I did not like that.
Yeah, if you sit front row, you got to sit behind the umpire. That's the place to go.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know why I just didn't like move back or whatever, because I had front row seats. Not like someone's going to get mad at me for moving into the nosebleeds up there.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay.
Our poll question. Episode 256 poll question brought to you by Atlas Goods. Go to atlasgds.com and use promo code CC15 to get 15% off your first order of Pop Rinds, the best fresh pork rinds on the market, straight out of your air fryer. There was a recall on some air fryers, folks. Look it up. I had to make sure it wasn't one of mine.
Well, good. It wasn't?
It wasn't.
Okay, because you and I have the same air fryer.
Yeah, it wasn't. Or microwave. The Pop Rinds come out fresh. They're fantastic. Go buy yourself a pack. Use promo code CC15 at atlasgds.com.
Try the nachos. Send us a picture if you do. If you're ballsy enough to try the nachos. Boy, you're going to put cheese and green onions and some tomatoes and onions on your pork rinds? If you do it, send us a picture, man. Tweet
at
us.
Let us know how it goes. We'd like to know. We are very interested.
I don't know if we're going to do it.
No.
We might one day.
We'll see. We'll see.
Well, what do you think? Cause I was thinking, because you know they blow up so much in the air fryer.
Yeah.
You don't put cheese on before, right?
No.
You'd have to like, but that's the thing. You do it and then you can't like overcook. You can't double cook them. So how do you get the cheese to melt?
You'd have to melt the cheese first. You'd have to, you know, like cheese sauce. That's what you'd have to do.
Oh, so you couldn't do like actual cheese, like on nachos. Okay.
Yeah. Also, that was a joke. The cheese sauce that not many people will get.
Nobody will get that joke, but that's our boy there. Our British friend.
Super JD Pearson, I think.
One of the best accounts on Instagram.
Yeah, he's like a competitive eater and he eats ridiculous amounts of food.
No, the only thing competitive about it is that he's able to finish these plates on his own. He doesn't eat for like competition. He just eats to like, I don't know. His plates are unreal.
Yeah, and he spells sauce source. Yeah. So that's the joke.
He covers everything in cheese sauce or gravy.
All right.
Some of the plates look pretty damn good, and I respect that he drinks juice at every meal too. That's my move as well.
Yeah, his body does not respect that as much, or his doctor.
Well, he had a little bit of health concerns a few months ago, if you remember. Yeah.
Forgot. Harman's just totally out of the loop.
We'll get you on the account here soon, Harman. It's a good one.
All right, our episode 256 poll question brought to you by Atlas Goods. Who has been the Canucks MVP in the second half of the season, guys? Thatcher Demko, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, and as always, I'm angry, leading the vote right now with 60%. Elias Pettersson followed by Thatcher Demko at 30%. Quinn Hughes picking up just 2% of the vote, and 8% of people saying I'm angry. We'll assume those people mean Bo Horvat.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that it's Elias Pettersson from the production that he's had, but if you're thinking about like keeping the players in games, Thatcher Demko definitely can get some votes. I can see why he's in second, but I'm not like surprised that Quinn Hughes only has 2% of the vote, but that's not like the percent of being the most valuable player, because everyone else is going to either vote for Pettersson or Demko. I think Hughes has also been very important to this team. I just think that, he doesn't have, I think the fact that Quinn Hughes doesn't have a lot of goals kind of hurts him in that department. Like if he had 12 goals and they were big goals and game tying goals, game winning goals, he'd be in the conversation a little bit more. But to me, it's just like, the thing that hurts this Canucks team so much is when they just get stuck in their own zone, and then you see Tyler Myers flub a pass. Sorry, Quads. You see Tyler Myers flub a pass to the point man where he just puts it right on his stick, and then the offense just continues for the other team. And like that's what Quinn Hughes stops. Like his defensive game this year has been able to be better so that he can actually pick off passes. And then his puck moving ability and able to get out of his own zone has still been at such a high level that he's able to just like stop these long possessions in the Canucks zone that killed them when they were in the bubble playing against the North Division teams. Like it was just unreal to watch some of these shifts. And we obviously know about the Tyler Myers shift clock and all that type of thing. That just doesn't happen when Quinn Hughes is on the ice. And he's been even better this year defensively at breaking it up. So though there's only 2% of the vote for Quinn Hughes, he's not getting my vote. Like I'm still voting for Elias Pettersson here. But if you think of like keeping this team afloat in a lot of games, I do think Quinn Hughes is obviously more than like 2% of that reason for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and I think once you expand the debate for the whole season, and we'll obviously, I'm sure, talk about this on another podcast in the future about who is the Canucks' overall season MVP, I think a lot of people can look at a player like Hughes and sort of examine his point production. He's top eight among all NHL defensemen in scoring, and talk about the factors that you did with respect to the impact defensively and on zone exits and all of that, and say, well, he has really flown under the radar, and I do tend to agree, but it's been really special watching Elias Pettersson over the second half. I think if you extend that sample and look at, well, first even in these sort of like 10 to 15 game stretches when the games matter the most, Pettersson's got 13 goals in his last 12 games. I think since Boudreau's taken over, you're talking about 27 goals in 51 games, 53 points in that time frame. So he's just been so dynamic, so fun to watch, such a complete two-way player. And he's kind of been, you know, there were stretches where Miller and Horvat were carrying the team, and now it's just felt like Pettersson has single-handedly been trying to carry the team's playoff hopes. And I think he's been decisively better than Demko. Demko was unbelievable in the first half.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been really good in the second half too. He
player of the month in December, right? Demko was.
Yeah.
So I mean, like from there it was, up to that point.
Oh,
obviously, like geez. The losses were coming with Travis Green, but do we remember like thinking about the first 25 games of the year? How many times Demko like got them to be within one goal? Team was playing horrible, and obviously he earns MVP for the first half of the year for sure. But I got the second half numbers here for Pettersson. So in the last 39 games, as we wrap up the season here, 25 goals scored, 23 assists. So that's 48 points in his last 39 games. And I just want to note 17 of those 25 goals at 5-on-5. So it's not like he's just blowing up on the power play. He's scoring the tough way and like doing, like, I think we even mentioned it about the two goals he scored against Minnesota, where he's going to the net hard. He's got his stick on the ice. He's able to not just be in open ice on the power play and wiring a slap shot. He's beating players. He's getting position. He's having a strong stick. Those 17 goals at 5-on-5 over the last 39 games is the thing that I'm most excited about for Elias Pettersson in the second half.
And the thing with Pettersson is I don't know if we'll find out ever the full scope of it, but we know he was dealing with that wrist injury, right? Like he was struggling early in the season and he, you know, he revealed later in the season that he had his wrist taped up at the start of the year. I don't know how much he'll reveal at end of season media availability, but let's not forget that he missed two games not that long ago with his wrist being sore, right? Like that's the thing to remember. It was bugging him pretty recently too. And even when he
came back, the first couple of games toward the end of the homestand, he looked off. He didn't look right. And I remember sort of being like, is he close? Should he be playing? Like, what's going on? And then obviously he was able to turn it around and get on this tear. But I think with his goal scoring ability, what's shined through is the fact that he's getting his looks from the inside. And you think about something like I can't remember if it was the first one or the second one, but the one where Garland was behind the net and Pettersson was able to get that one timer look off. That's again all about his awareness, all about his reads, and just having that confidence of knowing where the puck is going to be next. And it's not so much just blowing the puck past goaltenders; it's finding that quality scoring ice that he wasn't able to get to in the first half of the season.
And it's like it's just having the touch too, right? Like the touch. Yeah, he's not hitting bar down corners every time, but you can tell when he's shooting the puck with confidence. He has the touch where, yeah, it might go underneath the goalie's arm or it might be the five hole, but he just seems to be able to get that shot into the perfect spot to beat goaltenders. I had to look it up to see how many even strength goals he had in the first 37 games when he was struggling. Take a guess how many even strength goals he had in the first 37. Yeah, good guess, Harm. Yeah, he had two even strength goals in the first 37 games of the year. To think of the last 39 having 17... what a difference it's been. And to see him be able to score at 5-on-5 to me is the most exciting thing. And, you know, probably does beg the question of what this team is going to look like at their lines moving forward, because I've really liked the way that Garland and Pettersson have played together. If they can get another big body with them, potentially Vasily Podkolzin down the road, like there is a lot of hope that it can be a really strong 5-on-5 team offensively if they're able to move the right pieces and add something on the back end to create a little bit more offense from the back end. Because I think though the defense has held their own pretty good at 5-on-5 this year, would be good to see a little bit more offense. It feels like it's dried up and you haven't really seen, like, I'm never really confident offensively at 5-on-5 when OEL and Tyler Myers are on the ice. Like it's strange because I've seen it in the past with both of those players, obviously, that they can create a lot of offense, and they've been good defensively, so give them that. At times, they've had some bumps in the road on the way for sure, but the part that I thought wasn't going to be a problem was the offense from OEL and Tyler Myers, and you just haven't seen it a ton this year, I don't think, from both those players.
Yeah, it's been really interesting with OEL in particular, because I think this is one of the best defensive seasons he's ever had, and yet offensively, we haven't seen a whole lot, and I think one of the differences too has been, I remember in preseason, one of the first things that stood out to me was how he'd jump up in the play, and we just haven't seen him ever able to jump up in the play. And maybe again, it's part of the assignment of, okay, I got to defend top lines, and I'm also kind of with Tyler Myers, and Myers likes to jump up and do a lot of those things, and because he plays such an erratic style of game that I've kind of got to be more of the caretaker, more of the steady defensive safety net type. So I'm curious how much OEL has maybe had to change his game, because we have seen stretches where when Quinn Hughes has been out of the lineup, where OEL has been able to make more of an offensive impact.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm curious how much of that is a factor, but I think we're also, like, when we talk about, for instance, the game against Minnesota and even against Ottawa, I think that pair has been so good for most of the time that Boudreaux has taken the team over. I think they showed some cracks the last couple of games. I think in the Ottawa game, OEL really struggled in moving the puck. I don't think it cost the team too badly at the end of it. Like, I don't think, like, I remember, for instance, in the first period in that Ottawa game, OEL flubbed the pass and Stützle was in all alone on Demko. And there were a lot of plays like that, a lot of icings. And so I just thought he had a rough game. And then, of course, against Minnesota, they got lit up for, I think, three goals against it, 5-on-5.
I think all in the second period, too.
Yeah,
the third one would have been in the third, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, and so that's where Myers, he had a couple tough reads off the rush. So, I mean, that was, I think, part of the team not being as solid defensively, but yeah, it's been interesting.
As a whole, though, you can't, like, complain about the season, which is surprising, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think with OEL, I've kind of thought about this, and I'm curious to get your guys' take. I think OEL this season has kind of been, and the reason I bring this up is because people talk about obviously the contract, and they talk about how well he's played, and there's sort of this debate of if you criticize his contract, sometimes people think, oh, you're trying to insinuate that he hasn't played well, and yet it's like both things are true, that he's played really well, and yet the contract is still a problem, because the way I look at it is, I think he's been kind of similar to, in terms of overall impact, Chris Tanev is the player that kind of jumps out to me. If you talk about a shutdown top four defenseman who, if you look at their point totals, they're basically the same this season. I think Tanev's at around 24 points. OEL's at about 26. Both players have put up fantastic defensive metrics. Tanev's raw numbers are a bit better, but that's partly because he's playing on a better team too.
Right.
And so that's where you look at it and go, OEL's provided a ton of value, and I think he's worth, and this is where, like, I found the perfect match too, because I was looking at Dom Lucician's player cards and just how the model was assessing OEL's year. And I think it had him at 1.5 wins above replacement, which was a really strong bounce back season.
For sure.
And the market value was right around $4.5 million, which is right around what Chris Tanev makes. And I was just like, that makes so much logical sense to me.
Yeah.
And the point I'm trying to make is, like, that's, I think, where sometimes you see the difference in perception in the market, where you have a lot of people defending OEL and saying he's played so well. And then you have a lot of people, like maybe me, who criticize the contract still. And it's like both things are true. He's had an excellent season, and Tyler Myers has been strong as well. The problem is just they're still overpaid.
And I think the way to look at this, Harmon, is just, yeah, he's played well, but if you try and go trade that contract, you're giving up an asset to get out of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, no team is saying, oh, well, he played well, he had 1.5 games over replacement, well, we should make a trade for that guy. No, you are having to give up an asset if you're the Vancouver Canucks to get out of that contract, and therein lies the problem.
If OEL made, let's say, $5 million and Tyler Myers made, say, $3 million, there would be no complaints. Yeah,
no complaints. Unfortunately, OEL makes basically that idea combined.
I know. And that's why it's tough sometimes in the modern sort of day, because we're not even evaluating players for how good they are. We're evaluating how good they are relative to their contracts. Because it's a cap world where resources are finite. The best example I could think of, and it's unfortunate because he's been... he hasn't even had the chance to play, as Brandon Sutter, right? Think about how much of a whipping boy he was throughout his entire Canucks tenure. Yep. He signed for, I think, right around $1 million, give or take.
Variable contract.
And immediately, the second he signs that contract, everybody loves him. He didn't even take the ice, and everyone loves Brandon Sutter.
Yeah, he's like a low-key fan favorite.
He's a fan favorite.
Well, it is wild.
And that's just the world we live in. And again, it's unfortunate because it kind of... undermines the all the good things players like Oyel and Myers have done, but it's just kind of the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. Like, I think of it in a similar way, like, especially as we're kind of in the topic of like a cap world here. With like Alex Chason next year, it's going to be interesting because it's not like Chason came here making $3 million. So he's like earned a lot of people's respect. It just like, to me, if he was making $3 million this year and came back next year at like 900K, everyone would be going nuts. But it's just going to be like, oh, he's making the same amount of money. He might just, you know, do nothing again next year. He might do something again next year. But on that topic of bottom six players, I want to get into a little bit of just a player that's, that we've kind of enjoyed in the bottom six. And honestly, like how well the Canucks have been able to do despite some of the players that we've seen in their bottom six, whether it be a Kyle Burrows playing some forward, Brad Hunt being a seventh defenseman a lot of the time, or even like the AHL guys. I know, Harm, you've been impressed by one AHL player for sure.
Sheldon Dries, yeah. I have been just immediately watching him. And obviously, he's a small sample, but plays with pace. Not the fastest guy, but you can tell that he can make plays at NHL speed. He's got the skill to make legit passes. He knows what he's doing in the bumper. I can tell immediately with the way, even on the second unit, he's getting his stick on pucks, redirecting. He obviously had that one goal. And the other thing that stands out is for a 5'9" guy, he wins a lot of battles. And yeah, we saw that on the goal he set up for Pettersson. I think it was, I want to say it was against Dallas, but I can't remember for sure.
You're right. Backhand behind the net.
And so here's a guy who, and again, it's unfortunate because he doesn't kill penalties, or at least hasn't done it at the NHL level.
Yeah. Number one guy on Abbotsford killing penalties. First guy to go out and take faceoffs, like ahead of a guy like John Stevens, who's like relied upon to be a penalty killer. Like it to me, like that's why I made sure to tweet about it a lot. Like, you know, Sheldon Dries, once again, the first center over the boards to go kill penalties for Abbotsford. They were definitely working him for that role.
Yeah, and so I think overall it's just, I watch a player like that and I'm like, why can't he play in the bottom six? Mm-hmm. And I've really enjoyed his game and I think he's brought a nice boost. But you mentioned it, I brought up the list here, and to me, I think the fact that the Canucks made it until game 78 with the playoff hopes still alive, even if it seemed to wane at stretches post-trade deadline, I think it's so impressive because you look at the seven of the Canucks' 12 forwards last night. Jason Dickinson, Will Lockwood, Alex Chason, Juho Lamico, Matthew Highmore, Sheldon Dries, and Brad Richardson. No offense to any of those guys, but that's more than half of your forwards, and most of them provide no value above replacement level. Nothing.
Yeah.
They're guys.
14 minutes a night to those guys, some of them too. 14, 15 minutes if you're killing penalties.
And that's why it's been so impressive to see these top guys step up in the power play. And because honestly, the Canucks should have been out of it by the time Horvat went down, with Besser kind of in and out, with Hoglander out. It's like this, that's an ugly forward group in terms of the depth. And a lot of these guys,
we said on the last show, we're complaining because Chason's getting taken out of the lineup. Who would have thought we would have been to that point? And then for them to still be holding on at that point, who would have thought you'd miss Alex Chason in the top six? That's what we were doing on the last show here. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just wanted to bring that up is
you have to give so much props to this team for what they did in the past 2 weeks here. Like, they made it so much more fun for us here to come in and podcast. They made it fun for the fans to at least, you know, picture that there was a chance for them to get into a playoffs in a certain way. They really played way above what they were icing every night.
And it brings me to something that I wanted to bring up. All of the reporting lately, guys, is that Bruce Boudreau is going to come back as head coach of the Vancouver Canucks next year. Now, it seems like the only potential hiccup is if Boudreau doesn't want to come back. And, you know, you think about the Stanley Cup playoffs. We talked about how many volatile teams, if you will, they're going to be in these playoffs. There could be some job openings around the league.
Toronto.
I was just going to say, I look at Toronto, right? Like, if Toronto gets bounced in the first round again, you have to think Sheldon Keefe's out, right? Like, Sheldon Keefe's days have to be numbered in Toronto if they get bounced in the first round. And you know, that's Boudreau's hometown team, right? And, you know, it would absolutely suck for Canucks fans to see Toronto take Bruce away from
that
him.
Oh,
that would suck.
I don't even want to think. I can't believe you said that. That's like saying Voldemort.
You know what? I don't think Toronto would. Well, I don't. This is a guess. I want to clarify. I don't want anyone to think I'm reporting anything, but my guess is that if Toronto even made a coaching change, I don't know how appealing Boudreau would be just because he hasn't done it in the playoffs.
He does everything that Toronto does.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a good, no, totally.
But
that's
there totally are a lot fair. Of teams like Philly is so desperate to get back into the playoffs, and I'd bet you they'd be jumping
because they're so for joy. Dumb.
Right, yeah.
As you so kindly put it, Harmon. No, but the point
I still
remains.
Feel bad about that. I'm sorry.
We don't do grid numbers in Philly, anyways.
The point does remain, though, right? Like there will be suitors for Bruce Boudreau, and it right. does look like the decision's going to come down to him if he wants to return to the Canucks. But it looks like the Canucks are going to make him some sort of offer beyond just the club option that they have. So it'll be interesting to see what the coaching decision shakes down to. But I think this push in recent weeks really did kind of solidify that the Canucks really need to bring back Boudreau, because you can't go into next year, stumble out of the gate, and all of a sudden you're in the same place you were at the start of this year. Like you can't do that. This is an opportunity for this organization to finally have some sort of stability and do something that their fans actually want to see them do. Like, think about the last regime, how much distrust there was. And even the ownership group, like, there was Aquilini out banners flying above the arena, right? Like, fans did not trust the last regime, and for good reason. For good reason. And they trust Bruce Boudreau. They trust Jim Rutherford so far. You know, they trust Patrick Alvin, albeit a little bit less, because Jim Rutherford came in with an absolute bang when he showed up to Vancouver. But the market right now is overall pleased. And if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you cannot risk that by bringing in somebody other than Bruce Boudreau for next season, especially given how this team played down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know what? Like, Bruce Boudreau has walked the walk with what he's done so far in Vancouver. The fans obviously love him. You know, media seems to love him as well quite a bit. Even when he's like not in a good mood, it's kind of funny to deal with Boudreau at times. Like, and then when he's in a good mood, he's the best. Like, it's awesome. You know, the wheels versus doors or WrestleMania, whatever you want to talk with him.
I loved he was so. I'm trying to remember, all these games get mushed together, yeah. But there was one of the home games. I think it was Ottawa where Halak started and I think it was maybe Kuz who asked about whether Demko had been ill, because I think he'd seen the video of Demko puking. And then Boucher's just like, I don't know why. And then he drops an F-bomb. He's like, oops, sorry. And then he's just like flat out tries to deny the Demko thing. But I just love Bruce and that whole energy. Just a sidebar where just randomly drops an F-bomb in a press conference. Like, it's just, you're right. It's such a slam dunk to kind of bring him back, and the results speak for themselves. The a young player like Elias Pettersson getting back on track, and the steps that now we've seen from Vasily Podkolzin, where maybe that would have been a concern before, is how the only blemish would have been, have we seen enough steps from Podkolzin and Höglander? Well, we're seeing it now from Podkolzin now and him getting more trust. So he's checked off that box. Both special teams have improved a ton, and I think it's a slam dunk to bring him back.
Yeah, I think it's, and also, like, if you just think of the way that he's played, I'm not saying this is going to be their record for next season, but you got a hard bet on the Canucks being a playoff team again next year if they bring back Bruce Boudreau, depending on what they trade their players. And heck, we said that at the start of the year a little bit too. I know Harm was the one arguing against it. It's going to be proven right, I think, by the end of this year, but, you know, we were saying that it was going to turn into a Blue Jays podcast at some point here, which by the way, the weekend show at Sportsnet 650 is going to be some Blue Jays talk we're coming also, up in the future here.
We're also going to be writing for Blue Jays Nation at the company.
So we've half switched to Blue Jays stuff.
Yeah. We'll be doing Toronto fanboys.
Soft launch into Blue Jays coverage.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll do
make
some
someone
Mariners
really
stuff.
Pissed.
I like my Mariners stuff too. I'm
going to get a Mariners hat. I want to go down for some games.
Good. All right. Before we wrap up, do you guys think this is going to be a quick little topic, because I'm going to do a little bit on Abbotsford after, but you guys think Spencer Martin gets thrown a bone here, gets one of these starts, because they got back to backs coming up to finish the season. Still got Seattle. Does Martin get two starts?
Like, so I actually almost asked Bruce Boudreau about this post game the other night. I think he does get a start. I think he should. I think we're seeing signs of fatigue from Thatcher Demko right now, and that's no fault of his own. You saw that practice video that the Canucks posted, and that, imagine doing that like every day. That's what Ian Clark puts his goaltenders through, and that's why we've heard in the past that not everybody gets along with Ian Clark super well.
I didn't watch that video. My girlfriend told me that it wasn't something that I would like.
Oh,
she watched the whole thing. She knows that I'm not the goalie
thing. Whatever. It was awesome.
I didn't watch it at all.
It was great.
You and Woodley, you just ramped up the views counter on that.
Yeah, I didn't leave my apartment for a couple days when that came out. It was great. It was a good video. Okay. Spencer Martin.
I bet you didn't. Stuck in your room probably with the door locked.
Spencer Martin, going to get into a game, I think. I think the bigger thing here, guys, and I wrote about this for Canucks Army on Friday morning. Obviously, this podcast will come out on Saturday. I wrote about this on Friday morning, is that this is a golden opportunity for Mikey DiPietro to really change the narrative about him, right? Like, this season comes in as the number one guy. Jim Benning, Ryan Johnson as well, said this guy's going to get like 55 starts. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be the guy out in Abbotsford. We were even asking him about stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, I'm excited to be the guy. And, you know, he was even saying, like, I'm going to make it hard on them to send me down. And he was really confident in himself coming in the year. Did not have that confidence in game action, like was not looking good in game action. Looked like a completely different goaltender technically, and that's just what's going to happen when you work with Ian Clark, and that's why I was so high on him at the start of the year. Was just, he looked fantastic. His movement was ridiculous, but he was really struggling with just the in-game stuff. And, you know, it's a good lesson, I guess, for all of us that, you know, watch and evaluate goaltenders that, yeah, it really does matter to get into game action.
Yeah, there's certain angles and certain plays and certain movement of the puck that
you just can't practice for him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's something that we saw early on where, yeah, you can't, as much as you try and think that, you know, he had a full season of just working with practice and working with a goaltending coach, you still can't perfectly simulate NHL or AHL action, just any hockey
totally
action. And that was the thing that hurt him at the start of the year, but he's been excellent. He's been given, you know, given the keys to the castle right now as Spencer Martin called up. Archer Seelaws, by the way, will join the team. We're recording this on Friday. He'll join the team tonight. He's back up from the ECHL after a pretty good little stint with Trois-Rivières.
Attaboy.
Down there in Quebec in the ECHL.
My point being with DiPietro, he's been quietly good since late February. Like, since February 27th, his save percentage is .927. That's really good.
And that's coming off of a bad game. His three starts before this last one that he just had, .958.
Yeah, exactly.
He was unreal.
Yeah, and they play Friday evening as well, so it'll be interesting to see how DiPietro does in that game. But my point being, DiPietro has a chance to continue to impress people because I know that he's positively caught the attention of those with the big club. So that's all I had to say about Mike DiPietro.
And going into the AHL playoffs, just got to mention, coming into Friday night here, 7-game win streak for the Abbotsford Canucks. And I know you brought this up, I think, off air before we started recording. It is going to be interesting to see if Spencer Martin or Mike DiPietro, like, once Martin's back, I think Martin gets a bunch of starts, but they've really, like, over this crazy winning stretch that the Abbotsford Canucks have done where they're like 39-2, which is just wild in the AHL. They've really just like back and forth. Martin one night, DiPietro the other. There's been a couple times where Martin's had back-to-back starts and not at back-to-back games. I'm talking like on a Wednesday and then on a Saturday. Like, that's the only time that you've really seen a goaltender get back-to-back games on a schedule. We're probably going to see that with Mikey here. I don't expect to see a lot of Archer Seelaws while he's up unless there is an actual back-to-back situation. But seeing Mikey roll right into the playoffs here, it's almost at the point right now where they win a couple games this weekend, they're going to secure home ice for the playoffs, which, by the way, start on May 4th is when the AHL playoffs will start. And it looks like Abbotsford will be hosting that 3-game series, which is exciting. Looks like it'll be against the Bakersfield Condors or the Henderson Silver Knights. May get some Sven Berchi action, playoff action out there at the Abbotsford Center.
Okay.
Which, by the way, got an article up on Canucks.com this week, and another article, basically the exact same article, on the AHL.com coming out on
Canucks
Saturday.
Army.
You know how much they pay me over there at the Canucks and the AHL compared to what they do at Canucks Army?
Oh, whatever.
I'm just getting warmed up back into my writing here. So yeah. I took the big money gigs right off the bat. So I'll be back at Canucks Army here soon.
Yeah, yeah. Can't really fault you for that. Okay, before we close it out here, have to talk about the Canucks playoff odds. Down to 1%, according to Dom Lucian's model at The Athletic. The big thing, the Canucks basically need to go 4-0. They need Dallas to go 2-2, and they can get in to that wild card spot. Harmon, you close it out. Can the Canucks do this?
what do they say? If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Okay, is that what you're going with?
Yeah. 1%. Okay. Harmon's a smart guy. You know, Harmon likes his numbers. He likes the 99% on this one, I think. I'll speak for him. Before we wrap up here, I got to bring something up. I am wearing a long sleeve shirt right now.
You look good. That's a good outfit.
But I've gone through this whole thing, not really sweating that much. You guys are both in t-shirts. I was wondering, is it warm in here? And I just haven't noticed. I'm wearing the long sleeve shirt because in summer's around the corner. I just wore this for the first time yesterday.
Well, I came from the gym, so I would definitely overheat here.
It's a nice temperature. It's like 14 degrees out right
now. That's good. That's my favorite. My favorite temperature actually is 14 degrees.
Blistering hot this summer. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Really?
It's gonna be so hot. Really? Like, even worse than
what?
Like the Farmer's Almanac or whatever. We're talking about it. They were talking about it's gonna be very dry, very hot. Summer.
Saw the Daily Hive article. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And then like August is supposed to be like record numbers. So
we got.
Wasn't this supposed to be a record bad winter in terms of snow, and it didn't really end up being?
No, I don't think so. I always thought.
I thought
this winter was always going to be like not that bad.
Really? Okay.
I've seen the summer thing. I didn't see the winter thing, but yeah, I'm glad I got AC in my new apartment.
Which, nice.
But I think by the next time I record, I'll be moved in there.
Oh God!
We'll be recording at that. We'll still record here for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'll be moved into the new apartment.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. I'm going to die at my gym, I just realized. Because I already, like, even just in a t-shirt, I don't think they have great air circulation. I already sweat in the gym just as is, and it's only, like, 10 degrees.
Oh, yeah, bud.
Oh, God, I'm going to die.
A lot of windows at your gym?
Well, there are only, like, a couple of them that open, and there's no fan.
Oh, I mean, like, will it let sunlight in?
Oh, yeah, it lets sunlight in. Good.
Okay, because, yeah, see, I used to work out at Club 16.
There were massive windows that like let all the sunlight in.
But the Club 16 that I go to, I'm pretty sure it used to be a Costco, like in another life where it has that layout. So there was not a ton of windows. That's where I met Trevor Linden for the first time. Okay, we'll close it out there. For my co-hosts, Chris Faber and Harmon Dial, my name is Dave Quadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The playoffs are near and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.